Red Eye is 3 hours of alternative politics and culture, broadcast live from 9 until noon every Saturday morning on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM in Vancouver, Canada. Here's Lorraine Chisholm.
The terrorist attacks of September 11th have presented the anti-globalization movement with new and unanticipated challenges. Many people have switched their priorities from challenging corporate power to mobilizing against military retaliation abroad and racism at home. Others argue that now more than ever we need a global movement for a fairer world. Jaggi Singh is a Montreal area activist and organizer. He was involved in organizing against APEC and the Summit of the Americas in Quebec City and is a member of CLAC, a French acronym which stands for the Anti-Capitalist Convergence. He joins me by phone this morning from Victoria, where he's attending a conference on ending global militarism. Good morning, Jaggi.
Hi, Lorraine.
What's been the immediate effect of September 11th on the anti-globalization movement here in Canada?
Well, I think that term, anti-globalization movement, has always been problematic. It's sort of been used to as a catch-all for very different tendencies that are opposing corporate or capitalist globalization. And I think we've seen reactions, not just in Canada, but North America, that range from what I would call cowardice to courageous. The cowardly reaction are the reactions that are urging a retreat, urging us to be more quiet, to sort of surrender the political terrain to the people who are taking it over now, which are the jingoists and the people crying for war. So, for example, we've seen a letter by Buzz Hargrove, who has urged that unions not participate in mobilizations against the World Trade Organization on November 9th. Or in the United States, we've seen major groups like the American Federation of Labor, such as the Friends of the Earth, canceling demonstrations. Most troublingly, the Mobilization for Global Justice in Washington canceled their demonstrations on the streets of Washington. And I think that's very problematic. You cannot surrender the terrain. But alternatively, you have seen reactions where people are organizing quite vigorously against racism, against war, making the links to globalization, and they are not difficult links to make. Many people within this broadly based anti-globalization movement have had an analysis of capitalism and imperialism, which I think are words that we need to reclaim, especially in the current context. And there are people going ahead with demonstrations worldwide today, September 29th, linking the economic destruction of the policies of the IMF, the World Bank, and various governments to global militarism and the rush to war. And I think that's very positive. And ultimately, I think it's going to take some time to really suss out to what extent the so-called anti-globalization movement is going to react to the new political context that we find ourselves in.
Now, I know from speaking to friends who are in the States right now, activists who are in the States, that is a very different atmosphere there, and I imagine the chilling effect will be much more severe there for people working on issues of globalization. Do you have a sense of how American anti-globalization activists are responding?
Well, I think it's actually quite positive. Even at ground zero in New York City, where quite obviously people have been traumatized by the devastation that they've seen around them, there have been significant anti-war mobilizations going on in New York. Of course, people need time in New York to respond to the devastation around them and to assure that their friends and family are okay and to respond to sort of the humanitarian situation there, but there are responses, and there's this tendency to think that somehow victims and people who are seeing the devastation, such as in New York, would be the ones that are most likely to be pro-war and seek revenge. And actually, from a lot of what I'm reading and a lot of what I'm observing, it's the complete opposite. People who have had devastation visited upon them do not wish that upon anyone else. I don't want to pretend like that obviously is the prevailing point of view, but certainly it is a dissenting point of view that is more and more common that we're hearing even at the vigil that was held at Yankee Stadium, many victims, families of victims, were saying that this is not about revenge. There's even the family of one particular victim that wrote out an email and sent it out saying, not in my son's name. That is, don't go to war in my son's name. If you're going to come up with another excuse, go ahead and do so, but don't use this tragedy to justify your own prerogative. So I think that's very, very heartening. And we have a lot of allies in the belly of the beast in the United States. And again, it'll take time for that to emerge. But I think what might have taken 6 months in the 1960s in terms of the anti-war movement, what might have taken 6 years back then might take just 6 months today, because we have, I think, a stronger movement, networks that have formed. And that comes out of the anti-globalization movement. That also comes out of the mobilizations against the Gulf War in 91. And I think people have less illusions about how the West, and particularly the United States, exercises its power. So I think those are all things that we can rely on to build a very very strong anti-war, anti-racist, and I think anti-imperialist mobilization.
Now we've already been witnessing an increasingly violent response on the part of the police to street protests. Do you anticipate that they'll now attempt to shut down all forms of legal street protest that we saw on the scale in Seattle and in Quebec City?
Well, I guess we'll only really know when the next mobilizations happen. There are some today, but that's when we'll really know. But, I mean, I guess we can speculate, and what we can say is, first of all, the slow criminalization of dissent that we've seen since Vancouver towards a certain segment of the population, because, of course, Native people and other people have been living that criminalization for their entire lives, but that slow criminalization of dissent is going to be that much more speeded up. And McClellan has announced changes to Terrorism Act and national security, which are quite troubling, the speculation around that. So that's just going to be that much more speeded up. As well, in this context of war hysteria and jingoism, there's a lot of what I call sloppy thinking going on, and cheap shots, a bit of both. And you have this weird link being made between a classically defined terrorist act, such as taking a civilian plane into a civilian building and killing thousands of innocent people, and vigorous street protests. And these kind of cheap shots are being made by mainly in the business pages. For example, a Globe and Mail commentator, Bruce McKenna, in the Globe yesterday, basically compared student protesters and terrorists, and saying the police in Washington had to deal with both, as if they're on the same continuum. So we just have to be that much more assertive, but not retreat. But as to how the police will react on the streets, certainly this gives them, I think, more of a free hand. And unfortunately, over the last 2 or 3 weeks, we've seen, I think, just through all the intense media hype and propaganda, people probably relying more on the police and CSIS to solve their problems, when perhaps before September 11th, at least in Canada, there was much more skepticism that those organizations could serve any useful role in favor of social justice.
I think you make a very strong point about the media and some commentators taking cheap shots and trying to line up people who are expressing dissent and these crimes of terrorism. But I also know that you've been part of a discussion within the anti-globalization movement around a diversity of tactics, and your position has been to respect a diversity of tactics. And I'm wondering if you think that this debate will be affected by what happened on September 11th?
Yes and no. I mean, for the really, how would you say, for the people within the movement who want to take cheap shots, I guess that's an easy one to take. You believe in a respect for diversity of tactics. Does that include riding planes into civilian buildings? Well, respect for diversity of tactics has never been about making a call for armed struggle. That's not our place to make. That's not our call to make. I think we have to understand the context of where that comes out of. Actually, a lot of posters, a lot of statements, a lot of articles that were made before September 11th are now being reevaluated, because obviously things take on a new resonance, right? A lot of symbolism about, the Tower of Babel or the Tower of Capitalism falling down sort of takes on a new meaning when there was this disaster in New York City. But remember that the context of how diversity tactics was, where that came out of, was to show a solidarity are using different sorts of tactics in order to fight for social justice. And we can't really inoculate ourselves and isolate ourselves from that reality in the North. So it's a statement of solidarity. And secondly, it's trying to create a measure of safety and security within demonstration situations by being aware of different tactical methods of engaging the police, and more importantly, not denouncing elements of the movement that, while we might disagree with their tactics, are part of our movement. So, for example, when homeless people and street youth in Toronto, in the course of a demonstration, might engage the police in a way that, I guess, the mainstream middle-class public doesn't find very palatable, I don't think the response should be to further marginalize those people who are marginalized. So I think ultimately those issues are still the same. But I think, obviously, those of us who've been fighting for a more solidarity-oriented movement rather than a tactical purity of either nonviolence or tactical purity of just armed struggle, those of us who have been urging that solidarity through using this term respect for diversity of tactics, we just have to be that much more vigilant and respond to these cheap shots that some might make. Although, to be fair, I really haven't heard that. because those commentators in the Globe and Mail and the National Post who are making those cheap shots, they're not making those distinctions about people who are for respect for diversity of tactics or people who are nonviolent. They're dismissing the entire anti-globalization movement because they object to it on ideological grounds. So we can't lose sight of that either.
Right. Many people who participated in the in opposition to the summits in Seattle and Quebec City came home reaffirming their commitment to the day-to-day frontline work on local issues. How is this kind of work going to be affected now that there's an obvious need to refocus? I mean, I think this is a big challenge for us in how to respond to the many, many struggles that we have, right at home, and also deal with this. Anti-war movement that we need to build?
Well, whether we like it or not, we have to adjust, because the nature of living in an empire is that the emperor decides our priorities for us. And certainly with the war hysteria, the racism, the jingoism, we have to respond. And it's not a trivial matter. There's going to be an all-out assault on immigration and refugees, on those laws. There's talk of creating a U.S.-Canadian perimeter. That is, while there is a refugee crisis worldwide, to be that much more of a crisis with potentially millions of Afghanis fleeing. So we need to be that much more vigilant on that issue, on racism. And I think one way that the argument of fighting on the local ground has been expressed is that we have to fight on issues that matter to everyday people. And I think racism and issues around immigration and refugee issues are those issues that matter, and specifically they matter to people of color, which hits on another critique that has been made of the anti-globalization movement in the North, which is that it doesn't represent people of color and people who are on the front lines of oppression. So I don't think there's really any trade-offs to make. I think, again, the link between responding to what we're seeing now post-September 11th and to the issues that we've been fighting around capitalist globalization, they're not tenuous, they're not indirect, they're very direct. And if anything, it forces us to be that much more assertive and that much more public. And in many ways, we're seeing the fair weather kind of activism exposed in the anti-globalization movement, because those fair weather people are like sort of in a period of mourning. If we were to mourn every time there was a disaster or a tragedy, we'd never organize. This is not the time to mourn. It's the time to organize. It's a time to organize because we don't want to trivialize that loss of life in New York City, because we don't want to trivialize the loss of life daily that's happening in Iraq due to sanctions. We don't want to trivialize the human misery and suffering that's happening as a result of the refugee crisis in Afghanistan and elsewhere. So those issues are more relevant than ever, and specifically on immigrant refugee issues, on refugee and on racism issues, there's a huge challenge there. And this is no longer just an anti-war movement. It's an anti-war and anti-racist movement because of the attacks that we've seen in Canada and the U.S. and elsewhere.
Do you think that I understand that George Bush is using the crisis or the cover of the crisis to now try and fast-track the FTA. Do you have any information on that?
There's fears of that. I'm not sure if Bush is actually that close to that. It's more of the people involved in Congress, the various congressmen and senators who want to see this go through. And I did see a report by people who are close to the fast track debate saying that yes, they were trying to push it through. But keep in mind that that could be seen as a very disgusting thing to do. But it can also be seen as perfectly natural because fast track was supposed to go through or supposed to be voted on. Sometime this fall. So either way, I think what we're going to see though is a lot of those issues are going to be sort of put on the back burner. When I say on the back burner, I mean we might not notice them as much because of the focus on the war. There's just so many issues that are being ignored. But I guess that's the nature of the media radar, that it can only handle so much at once, and it can only handle one war, and not all the other complexities of how misery and oppression is being put forward through globalization.
The target that was chosen by the terrorists in New York City, the World Trade Center, was an icon of capitalism. And are you under any illusions that the attack represented a strike against global capitalism, even with these the threat of the actual threats to the economic system in the States?
When you kill average working people, that's no attack on capitalism. That's terrorism. I'm sorry. And I talked about sloppy thinking and cheap shots. There is a certain amount of sloppy thinking from some elements in the left who use this expression, the chickens have come home to roost. I attribute that expression to Malcolm X, who was a progressive, a radical. And when he was talking about the chickens coming home to roost, I don't think he was talking about Islamic fascists, if that's who did it, keep that in mind, or whoever did it, because whoever did it must be fascistic to have that much disregard for human life. The chickens coming home to roost will be when oppressed peoples, motivated by values of social justice and solidarity and mutual aid, rise up and attack capital and power. That's when the chickens come home to roost. So the chickens didn't come home to roost on September 11th. That's what's known as blowback. The CIA, they play games in other parts of the world and it blows back in their face. There's absolutely no solace and no patting on the back that we can take from that, even though the World Trade Center is a symbol of capitalism. That's just really sloppy thinking, and when we have to suss that out. Although, again, to be honest, I haven't heard too much of that. I've heard that from wackos, but in terms of organized political groups, who are involved in day-to-day issues, that kind of talk hasn't come forward. What has come forward, though, is explaining how the prerogatives of American imperialism and foreign policy create these situations whereby this kind of thing could happen. And secondly, pointing out that what we saw in New York, that devastation, in New York City at Ground Zero, is simply part of the devastation around the world, and the Americans are seeing what people around the world experience all the time. You know, 4,000 to 6,000 civilians were killed in Panama during Operation Just Cause, the Iraqi sanctions issues, on and on and on. So, no, I don't think there's any particular solace you can take. And even the Pentagon attack, right? These are military targets. That was a civilian plane that went into there. So, it's a clear act of terrorism, which is on par with the state terrorism, which is committed by the U.S., and their foreign policy.
I don't have very much time left, Jaggi, but I did want to ask one more thing, which is around the issue of you'd mentioned that we need to bring imperialism back into our vocabulary. Do you think that the anti-globalization movement, which has been focused to a large extent on corporate power rather than on state and military power, do you think we need to strengthen our analysis around state power?
Oh, absolutely. And as I pointed out, that term anti-globalization is sort of a catch-all for the fair trade, corporate power, let's reclaim democracy crowd, and the elements that have been very strongly advocating a strong anti-capitalist, anti-imperialist analysis. And this is not out of some sort of misplaced notion of ideological purity and making sure that we're always on, always ahead of the game and what have you. It's important because we need to have an understanding of what we're opposed to and what we're facing in order to be able to put forward a positive vision of social change. You can't talk about peace in isolation. All we are saying is not give peace a chance. What we're talking about is peace with justice, and that includes a very comprehensive understanding of what imperialism is. And of course, I'm talking to you on Co-op Radio and using the word imperialism. We might approach people differently, but I think you'd be surprised. People have a very common sense notion of a American imperialism. It's not too difficult. The average people will say America is, and not just the U.S., but Canada going along with it, and the West in general, and knowing the history of colonization and imperialism and neo-colonization, people have a very common sense understanding of that. So it's not a difficult sell, and beyond that, it's a principled way of approaching this issue, and it's important strategically, not ideologically, strategically, because I think the nature of our opposition determines the nature of oppression. And if the debate around upcoming events is simply hawks versus doves, that is people who are willing to kill for their ends, and people who are like, we don't like bombs and we don't like war, well, that's not necessarily a debate that we're going to win. But if we talk about the nature of imperialism, the nature of oppression, people fighting back, as they're doing in Chiapas, as they're doing in all parts of the world, then I think we'll have a debate and a movement, more importantly, that can really make fundamental change. To not do so is not only to shortchange yourselves, but is to it's a strategic dead end, because to talk about peace and isolation will really get us nowhere.
Jaggi, thank you very much for speaking with us this morning.
Thanks a lot.
Take care.
Bye.
I've been speaking with Jaggi Singh. He's a Montreal area activist and organizer, and he joined us by phone this morning from Victoria, where he's attending a conference on ending global militarism.
You've been listening to a program produced by Red Eye, an alternative media collective which broadcasts every Saturday morning from 9 until noon on Vancouver Cooperative Radio, CFRO 102.7 FM, in Vancouver, Canada.